Middle calf.
Hey, B. Hey.
Here we go. Sunday night recording of the podcast live on the tube. How you feeling?
I'm feeling good. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling great. What are you talking about? Do I sound...
I got the little sniffles.
Yeah, first time with the sniffles in like 13 months. You know?
Sniffles are back.
The sniffles are back.
Who's back of the week? The sniffles?
Trending up. Sniffles.
That's good.
Bryson was in great shape. I kind of blame myself. You had Bryson 18-1 to win the U.S. Open?
I did.
I thought he was impenetrable. He hadn't bogeyed. I hadn't seen a bogey in, I felt like, forever. I thought he was going to win.
I wasn't at the stage as a gambler of already allocating my funds, but I was close. I was close. I'm glad he imploded on 10 and not like 17, because it would have been... It's when you have, you know, a 7-8 hole stretch gambling on an individual and they fall out of it, it's easier to me to stomach than, I think, Finau and the Homa thing, remember, when they were going in extra holes. I had Finau, I think, like 15 or 16 or 18 to 1, maybe 20 to 1. I don't even remember, but it was like... That's a pretty big kick in the dick. This was just an implosion. It felt somehow like, Koepka beat Bryson's ass.
Yeah, it felt like Koepka was going to get dusted. I don't know what the exact stretch... Well, we can get to it, but, I mean, it was from 5-under to plus 3 in, I don't know, 6 holes. Felt like in 20 minutes. It happened really fast.
I got an overall geography take. San Diego, I think most people agree who's ever been there, it's a beautiful place. It's awesome. It's beautiful. John Rahm, I think, called it like his favorite city in the world. He proposed to his wife there. I didn't think it showed out that well, and no fault of its own. They had like a consistent Bay Area fog kind of mist. Felt like 3 of the 4 days, and it, like, even Pebble, I'd say for the most part on Pebble, if you watch 3 or 4 days of either the AT&T or whenever they have the U.S. Open there, and Monterey to me is consistently worse than San Diego. Kind of, it's much more like the Bay Area just in terms of overcast, and you can go there for a week and have one sunny day. But it is consistently, you're going to get 2 of the 4 days just beautiful. I felt like it was a battle against weather. It didn't quite pop on television like, God, this is beautiful. This is really cool. Because I had in the back of my head, like an old school tweet that I was just going to write Pacific Ocean greater than Atlantic Ocean. Cause you know, at Pebble, you just get inundated. Pacific Ocean. You're like, God, the Pacific Ocean. There's fucking great white sharks everywhere, but I don't even care. The thing's beautiful.
Yeah, the temperature's 32 degrees, but so what?
Yeah. But it never, you know how, if you get the right light, even in the Bay Area, if they get the Bay at the light, you're like, God, I just want to go for a swim.
Yeah.
I never once thought San Diego this week went like, I want to go swimming. Because it just, I don't know.
The only thing it really had going for it from that perspective was are they hand gliders or paragliders?
Those are cool.
Sitting in chairs floating around.
Those are cool.
Like, that's really the only thing it had going for it from that perspective. I mean, some of the shots, you know, anytime you get cliffside up against water, it's cool. But you're right. It didn't project
the Rose Bowl vibes. Yeah, you know, but you Rose even Bowl know, vibes. Like, you know when you're watching, what tournament is it? Oh, it's the one where the celebrities play, the Celebrity Open in Tahoe. When they get to that stretch where the par 3's on the water and everyone's just wasted, shirts off, the quarterbacks come through throwing dimes, you're like, God, this is the best party in America going right. Rodgers is throwing dimes, like, dudes out on the boat, half naked, screaming. Like, I was hoping for that vibe. I just don't think we quite got it.
No, we didn't. Several people in the comments. David, PB Free, somebody else. June Gloom, John, is what we call that, apparently, in San Diego. David Daniel says we call that June Gloom in San Diego. So.
Well, I mean, and they say that San Francisco is the coldest winter you'll ever encounter is summer in San Francisco. I butcher that quote?
No, you basically nailed it. That's... Mark Twain allegedly said that, although many years ago I did some research on it, and... I don't think he ever said it or wrote it about San Francisco, but the reason it keeps coming up is because it actually has some truth to it, whether he says it or not. So yeah, the coldest winter I ever had was a summer in San Francisco or something like that. So you said it right.
It could be a California thing. I wanted a little bit more.
I know. I'm with you. We did get a good Sunday though. Like at one point you look up and it's the afternoon and there's still plenty of holes left and there's like eight people within a stroke or two strokes of the lead. It was pretty incredible.
It was cool. Yeah, it was. The course, I had something about it. I mean, it's cool. Like if I had to do my Muni course rankings, I'd like Harding. I think Harding pops on TV a little bit more than Torrey.
But have you always felt that way about Torrey Pines?
Well, it's just a long golf course. Yeah, I mean, I just. In terms of shot making, there are cooler shots.
I agree with
Harding.
You. I just wonder, are we overreacting to today? But what has always worked for me about Torrey Pines is just the name. The name just sounds so mystic, you know?
What did I tell you?
Valhalla.
On this podcast? If I ever named a golf course, it'd be Tiger Creek. It was an idea I had. Did we talk about that?
I don't think so.
Maybe Red Creek. I do think a name of a golf course can just change how cool it sounds. You're right. Torrey Pines is just, that's just a sweet name.
Yeah.
If you just had a lodge, and it also includes a golf, whatever. If you just had something where people went, it's called Torrey Pines. Like that just, Pebble Beach. I mean, certain things just, that it's just like, God, that works.
Yeah.
Bandon Dunes is incredible.
I think Bethpage to me, Valhalla. What's the one? Is Valhalla the one in? What's the one where the Ryder? Valhalla was a Ryder Cup. What's the Whistling Straits? Yeah, Whistling Straits. Very cool.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Surprised
there's
just, not.
There's so much in her name.
I mean, I'm surprised there's not. It's Phil doesn't have a kid named Torrey. Torrey Pines Mickelson or something like that.
I mean, he might. It might be his daughter. Remember, she was the Val Victorian, and he left the U.S. Open, flew out to watch her speak.
At her high school or college?
I thought probably it was high school, and she was headed to like Harvard.
John, let's give some love to our DraftKings winners here. Jaden Frank finished in first place. It was 200 people in the game, and the top 10 paid. Jaden Frank took $450. Rick finished second. Jaden's team with Colin Morikawa, Xander Schauffele, Hideki Matsuyama. What's the nickname for Louis Oosthuizen? Oosty. Charlie Hoffman and Kevin Streelman. B. Kemp finished in third. Lights Out 21 and also T3. BCM 23 in fifth. Dalton Nice sixth. The real Tony Cervoni tied with T-Pain in seventh. Kilo Cartel finished ninth, John. And DP is money. Big Dan Patrick fan. Finished in 10th. $72 went to 10th place. So there you go. Don't forget.
Congrats to everybody.
Congrats to everybody. Thanks to everybody for playing. Oh, you know what I forgot is we should also shout out our last place finisher.
Was it me?
No, it was not you. Our last place finisher was Daniel Feld. Shout out to Daniel Feld, who had one player make the weekend. Xander.
Yes, I lost three.
Then he had Finau, Anser, Horschel, and Homa all missed the cut. And then,
I like that squad. If me and him are pushing on Tuesday, I'm in.
And then he had Victor Hovland, you know, get shot in the eye by a pellet of sand. So,
do you
tough
think
squad.
The golf? They use this term a lot. And listen, I'm a football golf guy. But like I've noticed a little bit more some of the older players and some of the younger guys use the term athlete a lot. Tiger, incredible. Hunter Mahan DM'd me like a while back because I DM'd something about Tiger at Torrey. He's like, bro, I was there. I think that's still underrated what he did that tournament. Like that's an incredible.
He
won the U.S. Open.
With a torn
blown
knee.
Out knee. And I remember a family friend got something in their eye once and they woke up and their eye was swollen. So he's not like making it up. But to get a piece of sand in your eye and have to withdraw midnight. Like, and he was, his Instagram post, if you go to Victor Hovland, he does a breakdown, like a whole seven.
You sent
know,
me
like
the thing. I was
see.
Like, what is this?
Yeah. And it's like whole eight. By the time I got to nine, I was like, I couldn't really see, but it's like, I can't withdraw because I got sand in my eye. By 10, the pain was so crazy. I just had to tap out. You're like,
you know, again, tap out when you're plus nine. Like, you know.
Well, yeah, he was a cut misser anyway. But I bet he was still in some pain. It probably
no.
Felt
I think it was probably legit. You know, he's a happy guy. Yeah. I bet sand in your eye hurt. You know, I've had someone who wears contacts. You get the wrong thing in there, and it is unbearable. So I give him credit for trying to Bob Costas it and make it through. But
you ever get like an eyelash in your eye that you can't get out, and it's your eyes watering, and you're trying to get it out, and you're going nuts? It happens to me every once in a while.
Sometimes I use like hydroxy. What is it? Hydroxy Peroxide?
Chloride, the stuff Donald said to take to get rid of corona.
No, not that. Anyway, it's like this very strong contact cleaner. If you don't let it sit for 6 hours, it's still strong when you put it in. Sometimes it's extremely painful.
Yeah. I can see that.
I can't. My brain's not working. Anyway, all right. So that, and then don't forget, get in the mailbag, iTunes, leave us a review, put a question in the mailbag. Also, go to the Haberman and Middlecoff Facebook page. I should start putting that in the YouTube description. Not only are we posting our videos together, if we find a funny meme, it might go on the Facebook. So look out.
Guy, it's just anything that you or I see, you're like, oh, that could go. That's what someone's like, Middlecoff, you don't have a website. I'm like, yeah, all my things are my websites. Like my opinions, I'll just do random posts on Instagram that if I had a website, that's what I would do. It has nothing to do with anything. So yeah, just they're all encompassing.
That's right. But the key is, I can't save the Facebook.
I love a good post on a meme that I steal. That's how Snoop
I thought
Doug
the one I posted
Instagram
the other
page.
Day was very funny.
I got to check it. You did it on your Facebook page?
Yeah, what your favorite quarterback says about you.
Oh, I'll check it. Oh, yeah. You sent me that. That's funny. Yeah.
It was good. All right. Let's dive in, John. Talk a little U.S. Open before we get to some football stuff. Not that we haven't talked U.S. Open, but John Rahm, fantastic. Louis Oosthuizen. Okay, Bryson really was one of the stories, I think, because there was you sent me a screenshot Saturday at one point. Him and Brooksy were tied, and I've kind of changed my opinion this week about Bryson ever since he did the interview at the beginning of the week where he jumps up behind Koepka in the background. I got to give him more credit than Bryson, a little more credit than I did. I didn't think he'd want any part of this. I didn't think he'd be able to handle the Brooks thing. I thought he would just... I didn't think it was him. But he did it again. This time knowingly in the back of an interview. So, you know what? All the Brooksies, anyone wants to yell at him. I heard a few times after a Brooksie shot, somebody yelled, let's go Bryson. So, I think he's all in. So, I'm hands off now. Let whatever's going to happen between those two.
The easiest way to get the bully off your back is to embrace it. And when he pivoted and kicked guys out, everyone with fucking a pulse went, Bryson, that is not the move. You are going to throw kerosene on the fire. He then has claimed, I watched all of his press conferences, and just because they would interview him right after golf, you know, right after he come off the course. One, you got to red flag the situation. I had about 7 edibles because I didn't do anything on Saturday, but I'm laying there. And he says to end his interview, kind of half joking, after he says, like, I like it when they call me, but I've learned to just, it's all in good nature. It means they're kind of rooting you on in a different way. And he's kind of right. And it means they know who you are, which is the most important thing. But, like, there is something bigger in all of this. He basically, without saying, like, are we going to do a pay-per-view match between these two guys for, like, $10 million winner take all? Like, he didn't say that part, but I might have texted you this. I think that's inevitable. That they just play for a pot of cash, right?
Lean in.
Yeah. That's going to happen. And they know this, and they're both big money guys. Like, they both make a lot of money. I've, you know, just listened to different PGA Tour podcasts. Like, I think Brooks spends a shit ton of money. So does Bryson.
Bryson drives a Bentley.
Guys, yeah.
You know, I don't blame him. I might drive a Bentley, too. I'm not blaming him, but I'm just saying, you drive a Bentley, you like spending money, which is cool. It's great.
Yeah, they got a lot of cash.
Spend it. But you're right. Your point being there might be a number big enough that's attractive to the two of them.
I just think they're going to end up playing for money. Like, and I also think that's just something that's going to happen in society. We're already seeing it. I follow one of the individuals from Dude Perfect, hashtag or something, hashtag Chad. They had sold out, like, the Connecticut Motor Speedway. People were just there to see them. Like, I think the way society, like, the Jake Paul stuff, they are making huge money. So you can parlay these just random bullshit hype on social media into money. That's what all these people were doing.
Yeah, you don't need a league.
No.
You don't need a
Jake Paul Jake Paul created himself, didn't he? Or the Pauls? Through YouTube?
Yeah.
Now, these guys use the... these guys were different than the Pauls, but they're kind of following the same formula. When I saw the Dude Perfect guys have 20,000 people there, watch them to do things, the first thing that hit my mind was like, I had heard Portnoy say this. He does the podcast with some TikTok guys. And I think a lot of Barstool people like our age are like, what are you doing? And he's like, you don't understand how famous these guys are. These people. And I at first was like, this is kind of stupid. Not, I don't listen to the thing, but my point is, like, I get what he's saying. He's using them to umbrella the guy he does it with, the Pauls. Like, they are really, really, the Dude Perfect guys. Like, Daniel Jeremiah says his kids watch a shitload of, like, these people are much more famous than I think just casual people, probably 35 and older, scoff at it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I really think you underestimate, like, if someone has 15 million people, well, I'm just using a random number, that watch their videos on YouTube, for example, do you know how many television shows, not professional sports, sniff that number being watched on a daily, weekly, whatever basis? The answer is zero. So it's like, but, and in fairness, if I wasn't interconnected with kind of this stuff through us doing this and being more locked into like YouTube and just paying attention to it more now, I wouldn't have grasped this a couple years ago. I would have been the first to say like, oh, this is stupid. But I get back to Bryce and Brooks. I just think they understand the power of all this stuff now just to utilize it for just money.
I think one of the hardest things to grasp is the volume of population that we all exist within, right? What is a million people and what is 300 million people and what is 500 million people and what is 6 billion people? And that when you have that many people, when you have 350 million people, you have the entire spectrum of tastes and opinions and likes and dislikes. And think about anything you love that everybody that you know loves. There is somebody that hates it, and there's a bunch of other people like them that hate it too. They exist. No matter what you want to find, you can find it. There, and the niche sizes, because the population is so big, a niche is not three people in a classroom. A niche might be whatever. Like, we've got a niche, right?
Well,
like,
I know this. We had a business meeting last week with someone who, you know, you should be hearing more about in the near future. And they told us, we were just talking business. And in their industry, they gave us the percentage of the market share they have in their industry. And if you just said that percentage to a lot of people, it wouldn't be that high. They make billions of dollars. And I think I've realized it. Through working with you, when we got an agent.
Look, John, let me address the situation. NetJets, yes. I know what you all are thinking. Promo
code.
But
we do business now with, you know, ad agencies that take, whether it's 5, 10, whatever these percentages. And until you see it every day, you just be like, oh, 5% or 10% or 3%. That's nothing. And the more and more, I think the older you get when you're inundated with it, you realize how powerful every percentage is. Of $1,000, of $10,000, of 100,000 people. If you have 10%, it's 10,000 people. If they're loyal to you, that's a lot of people, let alone if you can double or triple that. Like the Bryce and Brooks deal, they may really only need 500,000 people to watch, right, to do a huge amount of money.
Well, what was the...
Think about the match. How many people are really watching that? Maybe 1.5 million. It's not like 50 million people are watching it, and they're printing money.
What was the movie Office Space? Remember, the scam was that they were like going to take percentages of a cent off every transaction, right? Yeah. Just percentages of a penny, percentages of a penny, percentages of a penny, percentages of a penny. You stack up enough people, pennies, whatever it is, it can become very powerful. So anyway,
it's a great before take. We get into this ad, what if we just did subscription only? You have to pay Haberman and Middlecoff $9.99 to listen to this podcast. Well, let's just say this. We've never even thought more than having a five-minute conversation about it. Like, we haven't thought about it. But just do the math. Let's just hypothetically say we had 10,000 people that would subscribe at $10 a month. You do the math. I would literally have to grab my calculator. I think it's $100,000 a month. I think, but I could be wrong.
Would you guys pay that?
What's 10 times...
No, you're right.
I'm right, right? Or $1.2 million a year or $600,000 for me and Guy.
Maybe you guys could start bidding for that.
But even then, I bet whatever company we used would take 5% of the money, right? It actually wouldn't be that.
Yeah,
my dad used to always say this, like, everyone thinks everything you see one number and you think that's all it is, and that's never the way it is. There's always
tax. You mean when John Rahm won $2.3 million today?
But even like my HVAC unit, I've had by my HVAC unit, $9,500. It had issues. It's having issues again. But like John Rahm, I'm not going to get really angry and freak out. $9,500. But you think, oh, I'm going to get a top of the line, buy it, no issues. Well, there's been constant issues. Now, luckily, you got a warranty to protect me, but I'm not going to go on a rant.
Six Letter says, I wouldn't pay more than $3.99 a month for your take, so LOL. Well, we could have a bronze level for $3.99.
Yeah.
All right, John, let's tell the people about our friends at wineaccess.com/ham. Wineaccess.com/ham. I think we should pop up. Probably should have popped a bottle tonight. Maybe one night this week. Pop a bottle on the show. Wineaccess.com/ham. Get you 20% off your first purchase.
Wineaccess.com/ham. Here's what you do. You go on to wineaccess.com/ham. You search. You want Pinots. You want Cabs. You want anything. They have it all. From the best wineries all over the world, Napa, and that's where we've had wine ordered before. Here's what you do. You think about a brother, a sister, a loved one, a dad. I mean, it's Father's Day. You just send them a gift, but not even for a father. Just send them a random, thanks. I got 3 bottles of wine here from my son, from my brother, from my cousin, and think how good they feel. And it's about doing things for other people. It's the summer. People need to, have a couple drinks, just trying to relax, in the summer heat and the summer sun. Wineaccess.com/ham. Send a gift right now.
Summer of ham, John. Summer of ham. Right now, $15 to $200, whatever you want, it is all so stringently filtered out. It's only the best of the best. Only, one of 18, I think, bottles makes on the website, because it has to be unanimously approved by the Wine Access wine experts and sommeliers. I'm holding a Star Treatment right here, Pinot from Sonoma County. I've got the Domaine Nico here from Mendoza, Argentina. Like John said, for yourself, here's the thing too. If you haven't ordered yet, here's the little secret, everybody. There's a free shipping level you can get to as well. I think it's like 100. I think it's 6 bottles or 100 bucks. So you go free shipping and you go 20% off, and you can send somebody, and you want to blow somebody's mind, send them 6 bottles of wine.
comes in a box.
It's got a beautiful little play card that comes with each one that tells you all about the wine, what the notes are, and what it pairs well with. I'm telling you, you're going to blow people away. Do it for yourself. Do it for somebody else. Trust us. You're going to love. We have many people, John, who have used it, who have DM'd us and said, I'm using it again because it was so great. We're in that boat. Wineaccess.com/ham.
Wineaccess.com/ham.
So here's the deal. Vic Taffer wrote in The Athletic this. I will read to you now what Vic Taffer wrote in The Athletic. After watching minicamp practices Tuesday and Wednesday and talking to people in the Raiders building, Damon Arnette has become almost an afterthought. The Raiders signed veteran Casey Hayward in May and all but handed him Arnett's starting job opposite Trayvon Mullen. There was some speculation that one might move the slot corner, but neither has practiced there yet. That's bad. That's bad.
Disaster.
This is a player that...
They drafted him where?
First round.
What, 4 years ago?
No, John. Last year. 2020.
So he's a rookie. He's coming off his rookie.
Off his rookie year, yeah. Coming off his rookie year. Played 9 games that year.
Yeah.
Actually, you and I
I respect him, actually.
Yeah, you and I were actually kind of complimentary. Hand.
Yeah, I thought he was tough. Here's the thing, guy. When they hired John Gruden, whether it was his fault or not, they chose a direction financially with getting rid of Khalil Mack and with Amari Cooper. In really what? Was that a month and a half stretch, right? Because Khalil got traded right before week one, and Amari didn't make it to the trade deadline. So that's probably within no more than 2 months, right? Khalil goes September 1st, give or take. Amari goes mid to late October. And when you did that, you got 3 first-round picks. But you also got... Trading Khalil was your best player, so you're immediately shittier. And then trading Amari halfway through makes you shittier too. So you end up 4th overall. Like, you are a worse football team because of pressing the reset button, right?
If it was the NBA, we'd call that tanking.
Yeah. And you tanked. So you not only ended up with the multiple first-round picks, right? That year it was Josh Jacobs, really good pick. Jonathan Abram, let's face it, has been a disastrous pick. And Cleveland Farrell, which, let's face it, if anything is like, I guess, a C, but when you factor in he was the fourth overall pick, it's a disaster, too. When the next player that went after him, when you don't have any linebackers, I don't know, is Devin White, team captain of the Super Bowl champs on defense. He's fucking awesome. So it didn't make any sense when you did that. And then you, another second or first round pick that you had the following year was on Damon Arnett. So you have a safety who can't really play in this league, can't cover. Your running back's a really good player. But the problem is running back is the easiest position by far to replace consistently over and over in the NFL. And then you have drafted a corner who is already out of the rotation. Like, it just, you made these huge moves and then they give you a return on investment eventually. Now, the thing, it's not like they just hand you, you know, in this exercise, it gives you a pick. And to miss on those picks is pretty crippling.
The flaw I think that people make and made when they assess the Raiders' picks, and I shouldn't...
It happens in any sport with the picks. I think it's that? Just what you're
that
about
you miss
to
picks?
Say. I just think what you're the flaw, just the picks.
So I think it's the same mistake that people made about Mac Jones before the draft. And Mac Jones may turn out to be great. But this idea that some pick is more high floor than another is true, but that's not value when you do it in the first round, right? So the idea that, all right, look, we know we think he's probably not worth the fourth overall pick, but we think his floor is really high. His ceiling's not very high, but his floor is really high. We're getting a solid start. Okay, Damon Arnett, you don't think he's an elite corner? Fine. We didn't like any other corners. We needed a corner. His ceiling's not that high, but trust us, his floor is going to be high, right? But it doesn't work like that. It consistently does not work like that, especially in the first round. So when they, and now here's the thing. No one's,
because you're already at a 50-50 proposition in the first round that the guy is just going to be a decent player or not, right?
Solid players are high, are like generally high ceiling, because just to be a starter, that's a high ceiling. In the first round, that's a lot. If that's kind of your minimum, like you got to be a starter, that'll be solid. Like, well, yeah, it's hard to be a starter. Now, yeah. When they draft, here's the thing: when they drafted these guys, when they drafted Arnett, when they drafted Farrell, the reaction was. When they drafted Abram, the reaction was, wow, really? I think if we look back at the Mahomes...
You can even go this year with Leatherwood.
With Leatherwood, that was the reaction. Shocker. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And Ruggs was one that you went high ceiling. Great. But if we go back to the Mahomes draft, obviously drafting Mitchell Trubisky over Mahomes and Deshaun Watson was crazy. At the time of the draft, some people didn't think Mitchell Trubisky was worth that level of draft pick. But most people... generally speaking, did not think that he was a reach relative to the other quarterbacks that were drafted after him. That's not been the case with the Raiders. Like, it's been repeated consensus that they have reached for players that are not. It'd be one thing if you reach for what was the name, the guy out of Miami this year, Jalen Phillips, the defensive end, who's like, might hate football, but could be a superstar. Okay, right, but Ruggs, Arnett. Lynn Bowden Jr. is on another team. Brian Edwards, I think, could be good, John, but didn't play a lot. Year two, and he's not on the field.
Well, you could argue here, if you want to truly look at the draft, just like a numbers economic exercise, go back to what you said, the flaw in viewing things as high floor. Because ultimately, I think they kind of view Josh Jacobs like that as well. Now, he's just been good. You start off immediately the proposition of a first-round pick, especially like once you get past the top 15, right? So the quote-unquote 50-50 in the first round, I bet in the top 15 that percentage is probably closer to 70-30, and then in the 20s it's probably closer to 40-60, right? So your odds when you draft any given player are pretty risky. Then you guys not knowing the value of the player, like, hey, no one in the league was taking this guy here. No one. So you're taking a guy at a lower value in a proposition that's 50-50 or 40-60 or 60-40. So you're limiting your odds. Like, one big economic exercise, their odds keep going down the way they do fucking everything. Everything. Like Tampa, when they took Devin White, that was equally as risky as Cleveland Farrell, right? College kids, you don't know if they're going to be good or not because, I don't know, it's the draft, no one knows, but... Devin White was viewed like pick 3-7. Like, that was where the NFL viewed his talent. Like, as good of a linebacker prospect you can just get. And then they hit on it, but it's like, they had the value right, they took the right guy, and then they'll see, right? that's part of the deal. And the Raiders kind of do the opposite. Like, I know this is This is not where we should take them, but we believe. Well, you're like, this is gets kind of Billy Beanish. Like, your guts are way off. And then just the basic information that is just the market value that is part of talking to a bunch of people and just having a feel for drafts, they have no feel for. None. And what's weird, and we'll get into Mayock and Gruden here in a second, is we have evidence, hard evidence, for a decade of, like, Mike Mayock, just he couple kind of curveballs, but for the most part, it's like, God, this guy knows what he's talking about. We have contrary evidence to fucking Gruden on television. Take Johnny Manziel doing all this stuff. He consistently showed us, like, I don't really know if John knows what he's talking about. When it comes to the draft, and John is the grand poobah, he answers, he's killing himself why the players are picking. And a lot of them, guy, we're talking defensive players. I know. Like, their one hit was the running back. Well, yeah, they're offensive.
Colton Miller was a hit.
Offensive again. Yeah. The defensive guys, like, should be core pieces, like a corner, a safety, and a defensive lineman. I think ideally, if I told any team you had three picks, one 4, one 17, or whatever Arnett was, and Abram was like 27. So you have the three picks. I give you an end, a defensive end, a hybrid safety type, and just a starting corner. You're like, well, I feel confident that I could hit on two or three of them. Like, they kind of whiffed potentially on, I mean, it's just a disaster for Cleveland Farrell and Jonathan Abram so far through 2 years. And Arnett, they're already telling us, like, he's not good enough to play.
Well, and also there have been a couple things.
Again, these aren't my opinions. These are theirs.
There's a couple things that Vic wrote that, what was the line? Was it Mayock or Gruden that said about Arnett? It was Mayock in January mentioned that Arnett needed to, quote unquote, apply himself and get stronger in the weight room, right? So they drafted.
Do you know that one? You know, one of the questions about Arnett that I had heard, there was some character stuff. Like, he wasn't just like Jacobs and Cleveland Farrell, for example, super high character. You never worry about, like, mm-hmm. football character. Dabo Sweeney loved him. Like, that's just, you don't worry about those guys. So you're taking risk guys in the first round,
yeah.
that are like that. Isn't that crazy?
That's not to me. That risk guys are not high floor guys. Take a risk guy should be super talented, at least, right? Potentially worth the upside. The other part of this that Vic wrote a separate piece about, you know, after Derek said he wants to be a Raider for life, he'll only play for the Raiders. Here's something else Tafer wrote. Though Gruden and Mayock won't say it publicly, they want to see how Carr does this season. They want him to lead the team to the playoffs. Yeah, great. He actually just had a really good year. Like, he's not the reason you didn't make the playoffs last year, right? You're making it harder for your quarterback. Who, you know, could you pivot? Maybe. Like, could you trade him for Aaron Rodgers? Maybe. I don't know. The Packers have to be willing to do a trade with you. Russell's not going anywhere. This is your guy. This is your quarterback right now. And fine. If you had to flip a coin and go, one side we get Derek and the other side we get somebody else's random quarterback, we could get Mahomes or we could get Fitzpatrick, I'd say don't do it. Your guy can get you to the playoffs. But you're not helping him. You are not taking advantage of the fact that he's actually kind of on a team-friendly contract, right? You are not helping him. Even that's the wild part to me, John, is they've actually helped him become a better – like, he has become a better quarterback, right?
Yeah, 100%. But part of giving a guy $10 million and a $100 million contract, it's like – it's not like Derek had never shown out. Like, he had been good before. He just got him back on the right track. But you get credit, like, the whole team answers to you. And when you're the pseudo GM because you're the boss, like, that's on you too. The free agent disasters, like, that's on you too. So, like, yeah, they want Derek to become a playoff winning quarterback. He does leave things on the field that would kind of leave you scratching your head every once in a while. He is way more reliable than the total package of Gruden. Like, Derek as a NFL quarterback and Gruden as the boss of the Raiders, who's been more successful these last couple of years, right?
Yeah.
It ain't. Derek's winning that one. If I gave every owner the opportunity, let's say the 15, you know, if we just rank the top 15 teams in the league, quarterbacks in the league, we wouldn't ask those owners. They have their quarterback. So basically quarterback 16 through 32, if we just did an exercise and we asked 16 teams, the owner, listen, you don't have a quarterback. Clearly, if you don't have a quarterback, maybe you're open with a head coach. There'd probably be some legit young head coaches in those spots. But for the most part, those are probably going to be some of the coaches that will turn over the next couple of years. I said, right now, you could take Gruden, or you could take Derek. I'm going to give you one of the two, right? Because having a sweet head coach, right? If I gave you Kyle or Trey Lance, I bet most people would choose Kyle, right? Or McVay or Stafford, most people choose McVay. It's not like it's, yeah, Mahomes and the Russell Wilsons, but some of these coaches would get fucking chosen. Sean McVay, or I mean, Sean Payton for sure. My point is that Derek, I think, would be 16-0 over Gruden. So it's like they can make these, and I think they think that, but it's like you guys have led a pretty, honestly, I get why Derek says that. He's a pretty loyal guy. But my take was like, Derek, if the Green Bay Packers wanted you, you should pack up your shit and run.
If the Seahawks were interested in that deal?
Yeah. Fucking leave tomorrow and sell your house for probably a 25% markup.
They'd have to buy in Seattle. Milwaukee, though. Yeah, probably get a good place in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
But it brings it, you know, it leads us to this conversation about Gruden and Mayock in general as we're into year four now. And the crazy part is that it feels in part based on off the, again, I'll go back to Derek. If Gruden was just the head coach of the team and not also the general manager, you'd have to think this is going better than it is right now. Because again, his offensive play calling, fine. Now, he still is in charge of the defensive coordinator, but picking of the players, the decision to trade Mac, the decision, this team's less talented than it was when he got here.
I was told by someone in the NFL right before the draft that he had heard that Mayock was going to get fired. And I think the way he explained it to me, it wasn't like, this guy's doing a shitty job, he's going to get fired. Like, they were going to break up because their relationship is not good. I had heard from countless people that John Gruden and Mike Mayock's relationship's not good. Because I was told by people that know Mike well when he got the job. And you kind of got this vibe when you watch Mayock on TV. He's not going to roll over. He's not just going to be like, okay, Gruden, I'll kiss your feet. Gruden, you take whatever. Mike Mayock is probably 60 years old. He's made money. He doesn't, like, he's just his personality. He's a Northeast guy. And it just makes sense. Like, they would butt heads. He was not going to be a yes man. That was not going to be his thing. And I had heard it got pretty ugly between the two of them. Because I think it gets ugly between everyone and John. It happened with Paul Gunther, who was his handpicked guy. And I do think we had hard evidence of Mike Mayock's, if he had been the GM, guys he would have taken. We all watched the draft, especially the high rounds, for years. It was like, God, this guy really knows what he's talking about. And then he gets a shot and he's taking players that I feel like, God, Mike never would have hyped up this guy. It would have been a huge story if he's like, I think Arnett is a top 15 level pick. That would have been a big story. Like, I think Leatherwood, I would take him in the top 15. Like, these are things that these would have been, I don't remember him having too many crazy opinions. And now he's just doing all this shit out of the field.
I remember him loving Khalil Mack.
Doesn't it feel like ultimately it's just, and here's part back to the Arnett thing. Do you know when you get in issues with your personnel stuff? Is when your coaches pick the players. Why? Because coaches change over. Schemes change. So when you let coordinators make picks, they get fired and they leave for head coaching jobs. And then all of a sudden you get a new coordinator and you're like, I don't really feel this guy. And just, it's never any consistency. Well, they went from Paul Gunther, who came from Cincinnati for his whole career with Marvin Lewis and those guys. And now they just go, and that's what John wanted, to boom, going with Gus Bradley. It's like, you had a decade to figure this out, and then like it just feels to me like, and I don't have any inside information on this, that Gruden just ultimately overrides Mike and puts him in some of these situations. I could be wrong. Maybe Mike just finally got the spot and just couldn't make a pick. Doesn't feel.
Yeah, like I mean, if that's the case, why is Mike staying around? If Mike's getting overridden, I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying if you're not making that, if you are not doing the things that maybe you were told you'd get to do some of. And ultimately, when he took the job, we knew that Mike Mayock wasn't in charge of player personnel, right? That's Gruden's job. But what's the point then? Like, how are they going to get themselves out of this?
Yeah, I mean,
maybe Gus Bradley does a great job this year. That's, I mean, you could make the playoffs, but
what you're describing is
not a sustainable.
I just don't think anyone can work with John. I think it's very, very difficult at this point. I really do. I mean, I think it's just difficult. And I think part of it is when you're not winning, it just, with a guy that's that crazy, that rich and that big of an egomaniac, I think it can be difficult. And I'm not trying to claim Mike doesn't have an ego and think he knows what he's talking about, but you could see where it had a chance. Like, they're two pretty abrasive people naturally. Like, I tweet out this all the time whenever Mayock does a press conference, and he only does like two or three a year. He gives the best one. I mean, he talks like a coach. I mean, he'll just crush guys. Like, that is not how John Lynch talks. Part of the reason I think you and I agree why John and Kyle get together, really, they're kind of opposite personalities. I mean, they feel kind of the same. I think Kyle's much more like a Gruden Mayock. And John, while he clearly has it in him as a player, I think he's much more low-key. It's just more of kind of a unifier, just natural. That's his personality more than just kind of – a lot of coaches are just aggressive or abrasive, and that's healthy in coaching. And I think Mike kind of has that naturally too, and I just think it can be like oil and water, just be not mix. You know, and I don't think it mixes at all. Honestly, I had people in the league telling me, and it sounds like he would get fired. Like, maybe it would be like, I fucking quit. Like, it just, they don't like each other. Now, maybe it didn't come true. Maybe it's a little overblown, but it's not going well.
Yeah, it's hard to know. It's hard to get a lot from them in terms of, here's something one of them said, here's something another one said. Let's compare and contrast over the last several months or over the years, because we haven't had a lot. To your point, I know this, like, there was enough there. We saw this last year. That they should be somewhat competitive. Like, they should be in the playoff conversation. They should be. Like, that's, I have no problem. Like, they're not, to me, when we watch them play over the course of the last few years, they're not a joke under Gruden, because they can score. Like, they're competitive. But they've got, I think the challenge is the consistency of a full season defensively. You know, for them to go 8-8 last year at the time felt like a major letdown, right? Because they were 6-3 coming out of mid-November. That's what's crazy to me about them is that in some sense they don't feel like 8-8 shouldn't be that far away. Like, so for all of the problems they've had, 7-9, 8-8. Like, if I just told you a team went 7-9, the next year they went 8-8, you'd go, could that team X, without telling you anything about that team, is there a chance that team could win 9 or 10 games? You go, not knowing anything, why not? Seems like a natural progression. That's the part that's crazy.
Yeah, if you said 7-9, 8-8, and they have a good quarterback and a good offense, I'd be like, yeah, could they get 11 and 12 wins? Like, you've been building the core, right? If you just gave me a blind resume.
I don't understand. Like, that's the thing to me. It's like, on one hand,
But they didn't get close to making the play. They missed the playoffs, remember, last year.
Oh, believe me. I remember. I know. We were talking about it the whole time. My point, though, is that for all the stuff that we talk about with them, like, they weren't a 4-win football team.
No.
Yeah, they won all their games at the beginning of the year, but they still won 8 and they lost 8. Like, when we come into the season, the standard for them is going to be make the playoffs. You should be good enough to make the playoffs.
They beat the Chiefs, they beat the Saints. Like, they had some big wins.
They won at the Browns, which turned out to be a significant win.
Yeah. Their problem, and we've talked about this for a while now, right, has been they lose to the shittiest teams at the most inopportune times. I mean, guy, the Jets should have got him, right? I mean, the Jets,
they drafted Henry Ruggs. He made a play.
True. The Falcons did get him. Like, the Chargers got him, right? they get got.
In big moments.
And that's what you can't, like, that to me is a reflection. This is, like, if something ever does happen with Mayock, to me, it starts with Gruden, no matter how this ultimately, or Carr. It's like, this was on Gruden.
I think my biggest takeaway from, or my biggest overarching point when we have this conversation, is that when somebody has a 10-year contract, it just changes the whole conversation, right? Under a normal contract, there would be a different conversation going on if the Raiders had gone 4 years, 3 years, and now going into year four. If they didn't make the playoffs this year, it'd be a different, you'd be like, 4 years without the playoffs? It's not working.
Well, I think if he was just on a normal, like, 5 or 6 year contract, I think it would be like, is John Gruden on the hot seat going in this year? Like, is Mark Absolutely, Davis going to stay with this?
Do you extend a guy? You wouldn't have been in an extension situation by now.
No.
But 10-year contracts, I'd say 10-year.
You're right. It doesn't even come up.
It's not even other 10-year contracts. A 10-year contract, it changes everything. And I think,
well, to me, the only guys that get 10-year contracts are like the Sabins and the Sweeneys, right?
Maybe does Coach Belichick K's. Have one?
I mean, it feels like he's under a little pressure.
I think when he signed up for 10 years, I think we all recognize, like, that's pretty crazy, right? Like, that's the conversation was, man, is he going to make it 10? But I think the part I underestimated was how much it takes away in terms of just, year pressure after year four, going into year four, let's say, right? It just totally eliminates it. Totally eliminates it. Now, it doesn't mean he doesn't put pressure on himself, all that. There's no doubt that he cares. But I just, that's the part I underestimated, was how a 10-year contract just kind of changes where the pressure sits. Because it sits everywhere else. Right? Everywhere else.
I agree. Totally.
Okay, we got some NFC West odds we want to dive into. Why not, right? What's the countdown? I'm sure Shanahan's got a countdown clock on his on the counter in Tulum where he's hanging out.
It feels about 40 days till it gets serious. Because we're about, he said 40 days a week ago, but remember there's that easing in period. And then, you know, till like pads start popping. Once I don't consider training camp started until pads are popping.
When do pads pop? All right, we'll do a countdown until pads
are popping. Then we're in.
All right, John, here are the current NFC West odds to win the division from our friends at mybookie.ag, promo code HAM1. And here they are. The Rams plus 180. That's 1.8 to 1. A lot of money to be made here, John. The Niners at plus 170. That's 1.7 to 1. Seahawks at plus 280. That's almost 3 to 1. And the Cardinals at plus 400. That's 4 to 1. I saw at a different site today or yesterday the Rams and the Niners with the same odds. So I say that to say that MyBookie is not the only place that considers the Niners a favorite or a co-favorite in the division. And that surprised me. Does that surprise you?
Yeah, if I just take my I don't even need to take a bias out. I guess my bias is actually the opposite. I think this is nuts. If I was a Seattle fan, if I was John Schneider, if I was Pete Carroll, we won the division last year. We won the division last year. That happened. We did that. I'm pretty sure if I had to take an educated guess, 5 of the last 9 years they've won the division. I guess the Niners, the Rams won a couple. Maybe it's 4, but definitely 4 or 5. Like, it's not like, you know, they've only won the division once in 5 years. Like, no, they win it a lot. I mean, they've kicked a lot of ass. And even the years they don't win it, I don't know, they make a fucking wild card. So if you make a wild card, that means you're probably just a field goal away, maybe a fumble from winning that division. Like, if you go 11-5 and they go 12-4, it wasn't like, God, they just, next year they can, I don't know if they could ever win the division. You mean just like that interception that he threw that he doesn't throw and they actually win that other game and they actually get the tiebreaker? Like, that's, I understand just going, that was the Niners established who they are with this core of guys. They'll get back, not the injuries. I get it. To me, like, all three should be like 2-1 then. Seattle shouldn't be basically a full point lower than these guys. That's, if I was going to bet on this, which the future bet to me, I'd need a little more juice to put, like, because you'd have to put a decent amount of money to be interested, so like $500.
But yeah, if all I can do $10 is put my money. $17 on the Niners.
Yeah, so I was like, well, I'm going to wait for $17. So even $50, like, okay, I get $120. Like, you'd have to put a large amount. I think the bet would just be on Seattle. Like, if you put $500, it could pay, you know, almost 50. It's almost 3-1. Like, that's insane. Do you agree? Like, that they are that much lower than these other two teams when they are just right there time and time again with the same quarterback?
300 on Seattle pays 840. Yeah. 300 on the Rams would pay 540. 300 on the Niners would pay 510. You want to do Arizona just for fun? 300 on the Cards. Yeah, that one's easy. You're right. 4-1. Good math.
Cal Poly.
it surprises me. Now, I do wonder
if I said you had to put $300 on one of these four. I mean, you might just do it in the Niners.
I might go John Rahm and just put it on Seattle. The Rams, the team that I think is most likely to win it.
Yeah.
Right, John Rahm was the favorite. He won. But to me, Seattle, I'm with you. It's value. I do wonder if part of this is, I'd be curious, are the Niners just a little bit, are the Niners just more of a public team? My guess is that they are more of a public team.
Yeah, I would agree.
Than any of these others. And I think what probably puts the Rams ahead of Seattle is just the Matt Stafford juice, I would imagine, has people itching a little bit more on them. And I understand why you would.
I got no problem making the Rams the favorite. I just, if anything, the Niners and Seattle have to be tied. The Niners shouldn't be a full point ahead of Seattle. Like, even the year they won the Super Bowl, guys, do you remember? I attended one of those games, and they lost in overtime. The other one, we all watched the seat of our couch. The Niners, there was not a human being on of the probably, I would have guessed, 25 million people watched that game that the last minute and a half didn't think, fuck, the Niners are losing this game, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, we've saw that Niners, that was the elite team. That was they fucking rolled to the Super Bowl. They had a 10-point lead going to the fourth quarter. They lost to Seattle at home. And then the other game, they had to have, I mean, a top five regular season moment in the history of the franchise.
I think that franchise has been
in the playoffs for like 30 years.
I said to you the other day, I think that season is so underrated for how much they won and yet how often the season felt like it was in the balance.
God, they would have been the fifth seed if the guy
went 13-3, and it felt like there were five different other times when they could have ended up. The Saints game felt like it was going to.
They literally were an inch away from being the fifth, 13-3 or 12-4 in the fifth seed. That would have been nuts.
It would have been.
Do they go to the Super Bowl if they're the fifth seed?
I mean, they were really good that year.
Would have been three road games though to get the Super Bowl.
I still think they were the best team in the conference that year. But you're right. I mean, you can't.
It just would have been much more difficult.
Harbaugh did it.
He did. Did he?
Well, two, right? Road games. You go Carolina, Green Bay.
And then he fell up short. Then he lost to Seattle. Crabtree.
Yeah.
Don't come at me with Crabtree.
But I see the value in it. Is there value in the Cardinals? I know what you're going to say to that.
I think that's pretty telling. Like, does it? Is that more just they don't think people would bet on them, or they don't respect them, or a combination of both?
Or is it, are they trying to get people to bet on the Cardinals because they don't think anybody would?
Under no circumstances could I put the money on them.
I couldn't either.
I might, if you said, hey, put $100 on them 2-1 to make a wild card or something, I would never bet on them to win.
What would Arizona's number have to be for you to bet on the Cardinals? 8-1?
Yeah, it'd have to be it'd have to be like a Cincinnati Bengal Jag type number.
Because one thing you'd say, right, is it's just be the best. All it takes is the Niners quarterback's been hurt. All it takes is one of the other two quarterbacks to get hurt.
Well, there's no disputing. Like, they are not, you wouldn't look at them like the Texans or something, right? Yeah. I mean, they do have players. They do have a lot of talent.
Well, as an example, the Falcons and Panthers are plus 600 and plus, the Lions are plus 1600. This is like NFC East level close. Actually, it's closer.
I think I saw on my Twitter timeline you could bet 500-1 Lions win Super Bowl. Yeah, I wouldn't touch that.
500-1?
Yeah.
That's it?
Pretty crazy.
Lions win the Super Bowl 500-1?
I mean, most teams are like, 50, 60, 70-1. It's pretty big.
I'll pass on that. I'll go ahead and throw that $100 down the drain.
But yeah, I mean, well, Bubba was 100-1 to win the U.S. Open. You're feeling good on Saturday, and then he shoots 77, 78, and all of a sudden you're not even close.
Long golf odds are way better than long season odds because it's a four-day, it's a weekend. All you need is the
Louis
guy.
Louis was 60-1.
60-1. What was the guy from who just won the European Masters or whatever?
I would guess he might have been dead last. 500-1?
It only took him 8 minutes to hit a shot, but I was loving every second of it. I had no problem with it.
He's old. He looks like he smokes cigarettes and drinks whiskey.
Taking
straight.
His time. He was like, how'd you get ready for this? Like, my girlfriend and I took 2 weeks off. We went to London or something like that. just relax a little bit. John, let's tell the people this podcast, this show, is brought to you in part by Gabby.com/ham. Gabi.com/ham. When it comes to car and home insurance, you deserve better. Put your policy to the test, just like we did at Gabby. It actually literally stands for Get a Better Insurance, Gabby.com/ham.
Yep. Here's the key. You put your insurance company, you take a little quiz, and they use a query, and they check out your rates to every single possible rate. And you and I did it, and we were lucky. We just had the best rate. But that is not the case for most people. Because Gabby customers save, on average, $961 a year. $961 a year, depending on what state you live in, tax rates. I mean, we could be talking $2,000 gross. I mean, that's a little chunk of change. Would have been what I would have made if DeChambeau didn't hit it in the creek. But that's what Gabby does for you. It gets you cheaper insurance, same coverage, cheaper rate. How do you beat that guy?
Yep, it's the one true platform to compare real rates. They give you apples to apples comps of your current coverage and 40 of the top insurers like Progressive, Nationwide, Travelers, all in one place. Use your current insurance information to get started. In just minutes, you see quotes all with the exact same coverage that you have, and it's free to use. And they never, I know this one's big to you, sell your info. So no annoying spams or robocalls, which they don't take a weekend off, like the robocalls.
No. So put your policy to the test. Get a better insurance with Gabby. It's totally free. Check out. There's no obligation. Go to Gabby.com/ham. That's Gabby.com/ham. Gabby.com/ham.
John, hot ham summer is here. And you know what you need? You need that juice. You need that energy. If you feel drained after hiking or biking or weight training, exercising, whatever, you feel like, I just got to be on the couch. Try True Niagen. It fuels your body's energy engines, maintains cellular metabolism, and even supports heart health.
You know, they sent us some, and I took it after a workout, and I'm telling you, it helped. I felt like I had more zest for life. I was more energetic. And I love our partners when they send us stuff, because I'm like, I'll try it.
Yeah.
And it's a supplement that's clinically proven to boost NAD levels and essentially required for cellular, I can't even,
essential coenzymes, John.
Coenzymes.
Required for cellular
energy and repair, because you want to improve. You don't want to be sore. You want to feel better. Right now, new customers can save 10% on their first purchase by going to TrueNiagen.com/ham. And then use that promo code HAM. That's TrueNiagen.com/ham. And then promo code HAM. Save 10% on your first purchase. TrueNiagen.com/ham. Promo code HAM.
These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. You can't stop the aging process, John, but focus on aging in a healthy way with True Niagen. By the way, quick mention just for everybody on YouTube. If you could take a second on the tube just to hit that like button, we would appreciate that. Hit us with the thumbs up. As always, we always say, you know, share with your friends, that kind of thing. We're just hanging out here on a Sunday night making the podcast. But yeah, if you're watching right now, if you're listening in the other room, maybe you're cooking up a little pasta. Maybe you're eating some ice cream. Maybe we're on screen three because you're watching, I don't know, The Mask, which I watched a little bit on Saturday night, way worse than I remember. And, you know, the Eastern Conference Finals Game 7. Well, if we're whatever, just hit the like button. We appreciate that.
You know, that was her coming out party. Like, that was her first ever performance.
Yeah. Cameron Diaz.
Like, that. Then they find her a little like Whitney Houston style. Like, she was a nobody.
Really?
I think it was like, I thought someone had run into her at a restaurant or something, like one of the directors or someone in Hollywood, and was just like, wow, I could too. But I'm pretty sure her story was not like,
lifetime actress.
You know, coming for auditions. Yeah, I think it was someone spotted her. She did that, and it was fucking on like Donkey Kong. That movie, that was in the peak of his, you know, he had a stretch for like 5 years where he was making, I mean, 25
Ace
years
Ventura,
ago, $20 million a movie.
Ace Ventura 2.
Both of them.
The Mask.
That one.
Liar, Liar. Was there something else in that stretch?
Like, I don't think the movie star money.
Oh, Dumb and Dumber.
Like,
Dumb and Dumber and The Mask and Ace Ventura Pet Detective all came out in 94.
Yeah, he had a stretch where he made a stupid amount
of money. Ace Ventura Nature Calls came out in 95. So it was basically like the Tiger Slam.
Ace Ventura Nature Calls was a pretty big movie. Like, that was huge. I'd say,
Cable Guy in
96,
Liar Liar in 97, Truman Show in 98, Man on the Moon in 99, Me, Myself, and Irene in 2000. It was like Tiger.
See, I think in the mid-90s, he didn't quite make as much. And then once he did the stretch you just read, the second half stretch is when
he
was like
20, 25 movie. When you start making money off of the fame from the first ones.
I think the Cable Guy movie was, quote unquote, one of his flops.
Yeah, it was.
But it was huge. They paid him huge cash.
It was a...
Would you say he's the biggest movie star of the 90s? Like, I'd say he might be bigger than like even Adam Sandler.
Yeah, I would say that.
Or every bit is equal. Like, Will Smith was pretty big, too.
Yeah, Will... I mean,
Jim Carrey was pretty freaking big.
I put Jim at the top. What's his name? Ben Stiller directed Cable Guy. That was a Ben Stiller movie.
So they just, the two of them went all in. It was just wasn't good.
It was just weird. It was weird.
Yeah, it was just, they took him out of his element. You know, you just got to ride your horses. Because I was actually thinking about this watching the Nets. Who the hell were they playing? Bucks games? And we've talked a lot about this, and I used to always hear coaches talk about this. Like, most of you guys are not going to be stars. And I think this works in society, too. Like, once you find out what you're really good at, just go all in on it. And I think when role players, like watching the guys that just played for the Bucks and the guys that played around Durant, like the Bruce Brown guy.
Bruce Brown, baby.
If you just – and Iguodala really became this with the Warriors. Now, he was making a lot of money still, but he just embraced his role. If you just embrace your role and you're around the right people, like, who would you fucking rather play with than Kevin Durant? Like, just – what an incredible teammate. He just – it's kind of like pickup basketball at the Y or at Fresno State or wherever. Wherever you've ever played pickup basketball. If you're not the best player on the court, ideally you want that guy on your team. And then you just get to stay on the court. It's like, it's incredible.
You know our friend, my good buddy David Lindquist, who will never let me forget the time I told him in a pickup game that like his job was not to shoot threes. And then he became
you
like...
You really told him that?
Yeah, I was like, bro, you don't why are you shooting from out there? And then he became like Kobe, just refusing to ever shoot. For like the rest of that, you know, run, like basically like a fuck you to me, which I deserved. But he never lets me, every time pickup basketball comes up, every time he brings it up. Like, yeah, after Haberman told me I could only rebound and make layups, you know, I might have been wrong to say it, but I think I was right from a strategy standpoint.
Yeah, I'd say historically, bigs have had a problem with that being pigeonholed, right? Doing all the dirty work while the other guys get all the credit.
Especially when you're 6'2". He's like, you know, he's 6'2". He's not 6'9". He's like 6'10". He's like, wait a second. Yeah. I'm the athlete. You know, you're just a short guy who can't go inside. You just want to stay out there and shoot threes.
I saw it on Twitter, so take of it what. But someone, I think, tweeted out his actual statement. It might have been from earlier this year. It could have been in the past. His game shoe, Kevin Durant's.
Oh.
Is an 18, but he's a 17 shoe. I guess he just feet whatever swell. He just likes playing.
I mean, sometimes runners do that. I think from what I hear,
more space. Yeah, maybe swelling.
Double socks.
Did you see his reaction after he hits the shot and he realizes like, oh my god, that was a two, not a three. Yeah. Like he felt his deflation was almost as equal as the one he missed in overtime because he knows like I fucked us. That was the game. That was a series.
That shot was one of the most incredible shots. The shot he hit to send it to OT was one of the most incredible shots I've ever seen. He was
the Michael
blanketed.
Jordan from 24 feet.
He was blanking.
Because Michael used to do that from 12.
Turnaround. Step back.
Michael did that from 12, angled at the side of the basket too. So it was closer.
The shot he took in overtime only illustrated further how hard the shot he hit in regulation was. Because the shot he took in overtime was similar and was not even close. And it's like, you know, it's easy to say, I thought they were going to win the championship. Although, when I said that last time, someone said, no, you didn't. And then they found the part in the podcast from, like, February when I said the Nets weren't winning the title. But then I later came back and said they were going to win the title. So, I don't know what changed, but I was
when guys right. get hurt, though, it kind of – a prediction goes out the window. Like,
I still thought –
fats and running around. Kyrie's on the sideline in a T-shirt.
I still thought with Kevin – like, Kevin has nothing else to prove to me. He didn't have anything else to prove to me a while ago. When he hit that shot, I thought that guy deserves to go to the finals after hitting that shot at the end of regulation. And then you get really frustrated when you take another. It's like they can't stop you from going to the basket. Go to the basket again. Easy for me.
You
to
know
say.
What you know what sucks, and he's got to be just kicking himself. We could do this show till we can't talk anymore. Anyone listening, whatever your job is, for most of your professions, you're actually gonna. I mean, you could get better at your profession as you get older. Like it just. The more lucrative times could be like 2036, the richest year of my life. Kevin's, I don't know, in like the peak of his powers. I mean, he's like Michael Jordan meets Kobe Bryant. How many more of these bullets does he have in the gun? He's been injured a couple times. To me, if you're him, these last like 24 hours, you got to be like, what the fuck? And now, I don't feel sorry for him. He signed up for this. But he has James Harden. Think about his teammates. He has James Harden and Kyrie Irving, and they get lost in the second round. Now, I know both of them were – one of them was out, but still, it's like – doesn't that put in perspective? Like, you know, Steph and Clay are pretty reliable, bro.
It's
you get to the finals every year, guaranteed.
Also, just think about all the injuries that we've had. It's not just this year. I know LeBron wants it to be this year, but Steph's been hurt in the playoffs multiple years. Clay obviously got knocked out of the playoffs. Kevin got knocked out of the playoffs twice.
This it just yeah. it, part of it happens because yeah, it's a long year. Part of it happens because when you, I think just at sports, but I think part of it happens because when you're 32 years old, Kevin's 32, right? Kyrie, Harden, how many basketball games have these guys played? I had somebody in the NBA tell me this, that guys come into the league with the knees of players much older than them, in large part because of the amount of basketball they play when they're kid AAU basketball that they play before they get to college, or if they, you know, go to now the G League. And that the G League is going to expose some of that, because when you go to the elite team, every team in the league is going to have your medical. But I think part of this is when you're 32 in the NBA, or 30 or 29, you're 29 in the NBA, you might be in the league 10 years, right? You're 28, 30, you might have been in the league a decade.
Well, I bet Kyrie's 29, 30, he's been in the league a decade.
I mean, it's just the wear and tear before he even got to the NBA was very high. And then you add
to it. He's 29. He's been in the league since 2010. Think about
that.
There
you go. I mean, and that's to your point on Kevin. It's so unique for a football player. That's what makes Tom unique, right? It's like age 32. You've been in the league 10 years. It's probably when you're mentally, now you're starting to really get it. Like, I mean, he got it a long time.
I bet that happens in most sports, though, right?
Oh, yeah.
Your twitching muscles go.
But in the NFL, year 10, you're 34 years old. Major League Baseball, who knows? Year 10, you might be finally, you got a $1 million contract. NBA, year 10, you are in your physical prime at 29, 30, 31, and you've been in the league. You've done your 10,000 hours.
Well, think about Kyrie and Derek Carr are the same age. One guy's been in the league since 10. The other guy's been in the league since 14.
I mean, well, that's Derek is coming into what, his eighth year, eighth year in the league?
Still not 14. Nothing. Yeah, but he was a fifth-year senior, right?
Yeah,
you know, true. So it's I don't feel any sympathy for Kevin, though. He signed up for this.
Like, yeah,
he signed
it's up not for about sympathy two, to I me. Mean, it's definitely just about, Kyrie. It's not about sympathy for him.
But I think that's I did see that a lot on social media because he – everyone acknowledges, if you watch that game, and really just Kevin Durant, he is remarkable. Like, I don't think it's crazy if you said, like, I think he's a top five talent ever. Like, you could have just an outrageous statement. I think basketball people would be like, yeah, I could see that. And it's like, when you're that talented, like, he should rack up, like, four or five championships. But he left Stephen Clay because he felt like he would get more credit this way. But as you already see, James looks fat, and he is way less reliable to me than Kyrie when he's on the floor. Like, he was terrible. I mean, he is just kind of a lackadaisical. It was like, James, this is game set. He threw a couple passes. Like, I would get yelled at this in eighth grade basketball. What the fuck are you doing? And Kevin is such good friends with these guys, he probably wants to kill him. I thought James had a couple moments last night where, like, this is insane. Because James is known as some all-time great player. I don't know. I got a massive
respect. Well, I do think the thing with James is, you and I have seen him in person.
He's a remarkable
He's
talent,
one of the greatest things. One of the, you know, like if you said, who's the greatest player you've ever seen? I'm like, well, I don't put Harden above Curry. I don't put him ahead of Kevin. But there was something about Harden live that I've never seen in anybody else. That's just how I felt when I watched him. Like, oh my God.
Yeah, it was stupid.
But again,
that was 5 or 6. He's way better now. That was like 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
You know?
And you would say the same thing about Kevin, and you'd say the same thing about Steph. But, you know, Steph is going to just have some credentials at the end of his career that, in terms of winning, that these other guys, like James is not going
to It is important for Kevin to get a title away from him. And I think Kevin knows that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess
it's. And it's going to be, it's just hard.
If he had stayed with the Warriors and won 2 or 3 more titles, he'd go down like as what he is, one of the greatest players of all time.
Yeah, I think the legacy, some of this conversation gets a little stupid. I do think, though, in like the hierarchy of just the basketball world, for him to be considered where he should be as probably like a top 8, 9 player ever, like right there with like Kobe, Duncan, and that kind of crew. I mean, maybe just right there, you know, a little behind like Bird and Magic, he's going to need to win another one on his own. Because Steph has that. Like Steph
yeah,
won
but
it with Kevin
what
on
I'm
away
saying
from
is it's, what's crazy is like he left to win one on his own, but he's with Kyrie and Harden. So no one's doing it on their own, you know?
No, I don't mean he can do it with any.
No, I know what you're saying. I'm not reacting so much to your belief. I'm just saying, like, when we talk about him that way, it's like no one does it on their own.
Which is stupid.
Shaq
because
had Kobe. Like, they all
while it was
are the
Steph's
collections
team,
of the greatest players.
Do you agree with this? While it was Steph's team, Kevin was the lead dog.
Well, in that situation, yeah. I mean, he's getting the ball to create something.
Yeah. Because he's unstoppable.
So
he's a remarkable basketball player.
Yeah.
Honestly, I give Giannis credit. Honestly, it felt like, you know, just win for the good guys. These guys just stayed together. They just kept swinging. They got a little lucky, but it didn't feel lucky. It was weird. I didn't even know how to feel when the game ended, but it was like, they have to feel pretty fucking relieved because then it was a moment where they thought they lost.
You agree.
But then they thought they won. That game was fantastic.
Like, I'm watching Sixers, Lakers.
That game was way better. Watching it in the background.
Yeah. But there is something. These game sevens with crowds are just, it just take it to a whole other level. The bubble, I will never believe that the bubble was a legitimate championship. You can't compare it to this.
Well, it wasn't. And I think most of the championships, like, you can be a really, really good player or a great team. Like, LeBron is a championship-level player. I don't count that. The Dodgers, they have been the best team in baseball for, like, felt like the decade. That was not baseball. They played 60 fucking games. I text you today. I don't think even in the golf community, maybe in the golf community they hype him up, but, like, what Colin Morikawa, and he had a little bit of a Bryson moment. He pulled a Haberman Middlecoff thin to chip into the gallery after just a disastrous hole. He is so fucking good. He is so good. Like, Colin Morikawa is, I would say, over under majors for that guy at like 4.5. Like, he's got multiple more coming in his 20s. But the major that he has right now, is he winning that with a packed house in that point in time in his career?
Never won.
I don't know.
A major before. Had he won before? Has he won twice now? Did that come before or after his other win?
I think he's won like 3 or 4 times. But he's won like a couple lower level tournaments. Like, you know, those like the tournaments that go side by side when he was younger. Mm-hmm. He won Jack's tournament last year against JT.
Was that the week after? Oh, no, that was the week. He almost missed that putt on 18 and won the playoff.
Yeah, he missed one, and then the next week he wins. And then, yeah. So he won Seminole against Horschel this year. Remember the course in Florida? He beat Billy Ho.
That's right.
And that course that was kind of
another
cool.
Good name.
But again, my point. Yeah, it is a great. It's just a Seminole. It's like Florida State Seminoles. Just a solid name. I have no clue what it means. Like Indian tribe, I would guess.
Yep.
So yeah, I just 2020 was just kind of fake sports.
Seminole win.
which we watched and we loved.
What's that? Oh, yeah. No, we
Loves did. Would be strong. Consumed, I watched.
Well, yeah, we needed something.
I did. There were several times during the NFL season, I'm like, you know, Saturday morning, empty stadium in Buffalo, like Buffalo Dolphins. Like, let's just, this doesn't quite feel that cool.
No, but Wednesday morning.
Alabama's like, yeah, we didn't really have that problem.
By the way, for people who are, you know, we're streaming here, we should welcome the San Francisco Giants and NBC, John, to the streaming game. It's good to have you guys in the streaming game, Giants-Phillies. Did everybody that wanted to see that? You said you were texting with a couple people. Somebody texted me. They told me it was very easy. They didn't realize it was going to be free. It was free. It's pretty alarming, though, when you go to your, like old school people like me, you go to your remote, I go old school. I say the thing into the thing. Giants. And then a peacock, registration comes up, and I didn't know what to do. But it seemed like it was pretty seamless for people. I didn't hear a lot of complaining. Did you?
All you have to do is you're a customer because you have Comcast cable. So they send you like a, you know, you do create a login and then immediately they'll send you a thing. Like you go to TV login Xfinity / on your phone. They send it and boom, you're in. It looks more challenging than it actually is. I do think we need to almost throw away the word streaming though. I guess what we're doing is more old school streaming. Like we're just live on YouTube, live. I think what Twitch would be considered. A lot of people do this on YouTube. But if you and I were to produce a video and then put it on like YouTube, like that's no longer streaming, right? Like if you just watch like Jake Paul's produced videos, like that's not streamed. He just posted it on YouTube, right?
Right.
But I think streaming forever was like the modern version of the way we grew up to signing on to the internet. We'd be like, and then you'd finally like connect. You're like, we did it. We connected. Where it was like, oh, I streamed something. Remember when I lived with you, there was that show, Dexter. And you could like go to these free websites that were like, it was just like through streaming it illegally.
Dexter's
and
coming
that
back,
was
by
legitimately,
the way.
Sometimes it would load up. Right? Yep. Like that was true streaming. That was 08, 09. That was 10 years ago. If you watch
the
Giants on Peacock.
What was the Duchovny show? Californication. That was another one that streamed.
illegally.
That's illegally streamed. That is the correct vernacular to describe that. I would not say what I watched Giants, Peacock. You missed out, actually. It was like John Kruk, Jimmy Rollins, and John Miller.
I used the MLB app, then I activated my VPN, said my IP address was in Seattle, and then I watched the game that way. But it actually turned out it's probably more work than what you described. Just the second I have to create a new password, I just want to, my head wants to explode. The second I have to create a password.
That might be, I'd even consider MLB TV even closer to streaming than what, Peacock was no different than going to 720 on Comcast.
Yeah.
Same fucking thing. That is not streaming.
It was a TV production that's what, it was a TV production that they streamed, right? Amazon NFL is going to be a TV production that is on the internet streamed.
It does. It, to me, it just feels like TV when I watch it. I guess the way I'm describing
on your TV, right? Yeah, that's part of it. You watch it on your
TV. Just on your TV. I do think streaming has just been, maybe they've replaced, because that's technically still what it is. It does not feel like.
Well, I think it started as meaning one thing.
Because you're right. Now TV production.
Now it means multiple things, and in 10 years, it'll mean one thing again, right?
Yeah.
Just it'll mean anything that you watch live is streamed, probably.
Do you think,
because TV is decade, really, it turns out TV is the thing I'm watching it on, not the content itself, right? Yeah. Like there's this weird, it means different things right now. Like a TV show is different than streaming Netflix because it's done by the television networks, but now the television networks are streaming things.
See, and so I'd also say
is
that
TV
going to
be called
really
a TV forever?
And didn't Netflix just rip off like a lot of, they just do a lot of series. That
hell, they buy some of the TV series. They put TV series on Netflix. It's just, you can go watch, you know, Will and Grace. I don't know. Whatever.
So, yeah, I enjoyed Peacock.
We're part of the
and
future
I watched
right now,
Peacock
everybody.
For U.S. Open. Yeah. I'm in it.
Well,
I'm
you watch Peacock. For, oh, you were watching the U.S. Open for free on Peacock.
Well, yeah, because you don't need to sign in. I'm telling you, it just goes to your phone. You press two buttons. And you're just in. You can watch whatever Peacock has.
The second I have to make a password, it's just a major hurdle for
me. I'm with you. I lose it, too. I lose it.
It's like, I don't. I can't.
But I had to give in because I needed to watch
Your boy
the
Kruk.
U.S. Open.
Oh, yeah.
And then I watched Kruk and J-Roll, who's also, I'd forgotten, but Jimmy Rollins from Oakland.
Oh, yeah. You know, Gary Payton's got a basketball team in Oakland now. He's coaching. Like a D2, I don't know what they are. He's just got a job. Gary Payton got a job coaching a college. I actually am not familiar with the college in Oakland. They don't have a basketball team. He's starting the basketball team. Maybe I don't know if Haberman and Middlecoff could get the broadcast rights to this league, John, or to this team. Do you have?
No, I honestly
Gary
didn't
Payton,
know that.
College head coach, Lincoln University in Oakland. They're just starting a basketball
didn't know
team.
Did not know it existed. Did you know that CJ Anderson, former Cal running back, Vallejo native,
Broncos,
Adam Peters signed him as an undrafted free agent, gave him credit when Adam got the job, just became the head coach at Monta Vista in Danville?
I did not know that. How old is he?
Yeah.
28?
I mean,
27?
No, he's probably, I would have been 25, he would have been 22, he's probably 32. Actually, maybe he's 30.
I feel like he's...
But he just got named the head coach. I think that's cool. Like,
that is cool.
He's 30.
Ramon on YouTube says, I saw your tweet this morning. Did you watch the French Grand Prix live or just the highlights on YouTube again? Diehard F1 fan. I watched it live. Thing was at 6 a.m. I woke up like 7:15 on Sunday. I immediately went to check who won. It said it was still going on. So I watched the last 10 laps. Max Verstappen past Lewis Hamilton on the last lap. It might have been on the Mulsanne straight. Not sure. Flew by him, John. Won the thing. Red Bull took two of the three. Perez, they were the conductors of the team award. And it turned out, I think Lewis said he had bad tires. So there's your
Lewis,
F1 breakdown.
Did Lewis, what are they, podium?
Lewis podium, he finished second. Verstappen passed him on the last lap.
Would you say anything not one for Lewis feels like a fail?
It's John, I think they said something like it's the first time, and I don't know, in forever that he hasn't, it's been three straight races since he's won. It's like one of the longest droughts of his career since he started being Lewis Hamilton the great.
Three races
in a row that he hasn't won. He finished second, beat everybody.
So there's got to be some tension inside that building in Mercedes right now.
Yeah, the pressure, Red Bull's putting the pressure on, John. from the probably this season I've watched now a total of 16 laps.
So would you say Max, second best guy?
I think, John, I almost tweeted this morning, but seven people care.
Has Max Verstappen passed Lewis Hamilton? It feels to me like he has.
Yeah.
Every time I've watched twice, Verstappen's just kicked. Actually, I guess Lewis might have won the other thing I watched, but feels like Verstappen.
Listen, I'm not a Lewis hater. I root for guys to corner the market. I like Tiger Woods. I liked, you know, I actually didn't really like Pete Sampras. Always was more of an Agassi guy, but I'm rooting for Lewis to end. It just feels like it's been going on long enough now. Like, I mean, is he going to have, like, we need 10 more years of this? Like, we've seen it.
Just want some drama.
Let's let some, even if Lewis is just, has Lewis lost it? I can even do that.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not winning anymore.
I'm cool with that.
There's a take that I've heard from here.
Guy, I didn't even follow F1, and you just kind of knew who Lewis was. Like, oh, my God, always wins a fucking race.
I didn't quite know exactly what the league was, but I knew who he was.
I felt like the IndyCar, which is clearly different, I always felt like there were more cars on the road than the 20. It's really not many cars on the road.
The road's small, I guess. I don't. All I know is Haas, the American team, keeps finishing like 19 and 20, dead last.
Not that I ever watched NASCAR, but they definitely have way more cars than 20.
Yeah, isn't it like...
Right, they got like 50.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Or 40. Yeah.
So, all right. Big week ahead. Tell your friends. Again, if you're here on the video, just give it a like. We appreciate that. And don't forget to get your mailbag questions in on iTunes and on the Haberman and Middlecoff Facebook page.
Yep, go like that thing and subscribe to the YouTube page. You guys know the drill. Yeah. A lot of social content out there.
We appreciate you. We appreciate your likes.
We'll keep posting memes on the Facebook page.
Yeah. Let's see what we got this week.
Okay.
All right, later.
Later.
At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.